This is an interview with Mary Holman Dodge for the Oral History of the Southern San Joaquin Valley by Betty Parker at the Pioneer Village on October 23rd at 2 o'clock. Mary, we have a list of things here that you filled out for us in answer to some of our questions. Your birth date.
September 23rd, 1912.
And where were you born?
In Bakersfield.
In Bakersfield. Well, then you're one of our native people here. You spent your childhood there in Bakersfield.
Yes.
Uh-huh. What schools did you go to?
Went to Hawthorne, went to Bryant, to Emerson, Kern County Union High School, Bakersfield Junior College when it was on the high school grounds, mm-hmm. and University of California.
I see. And when did you graduate from the university?
1933.
You didn't go into law enforcement at that time?
No.
What did you work at that particular time?
Well, at that time I was a waitress. I'm probably one of Bakersfield's best waitresses now. Because I went to school during Depression years. And my folks could then send me $15 a month to help out. And I had to earn the rest of my way. And I became a waitress, and I was a very good waitress. And I graduated in 1933 with a major in mathematics. There were no jobs for lady mathematicians in those days. So I kept on being a waitress and kept on going to school and trying to get a teaching credential because I didn't particularly want to teach, but that was one thing that lady mathematicians could do.
Did you work as a waitress here in Bakersfield at all?
No.
You never
lived? Around the university.
Uh-huh. Well, then, did you teach here?
No. I taught in Tularean and Pleasanton.
In Pleasanton.
In high school.
High school graduate. Well, now your folks came to Bakersfield. Do you know what year and why they came here? Or were they born here?
No. No. My mother was born in Texas. My father was born in Grass Valley. And
what was your mother's name, maiden name?
Bertha Beatrice Beshears, B-E-S-H-E-A-R-S.
Do you know where she was from in Texas?
Hamilton County,
Hamilton.
In Texas. She's still living here.
Is she?
Mm-hmm. She lives out at Pan Loos. She's 87 years old now.
And your father was from Grass Valley?
From Grass Valley.
Mm-hmm. And his name?
William Harvey Holman. His mother was even born in Grass Valley, so.
That would have been some time back.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Your folks came here then, for what reason? Do you remember?
Well, I would say probably for romantic reasons more than anything else, yeah. They had met My paternal grandfather was a school teacher, and he was a sort of a wandering school teacher because he usually didn't teach more than one year at one place. He always fought with the school board. And he was a very bright man and a very unpleasant man. And so he moved around a good deal. And he and his family were living in Grass Valley when my mother's family moved there from Texas. And my mother and father became acquainted. Then my mother's family moved back to Texas. They got engaged sort of long distance by letter. Then my mother's family moved to Bakersfield, and my father came here to see my mother. And then they eventually married.
Do you know what year they were married?
Yeah, they were married in 1908.
And then they settled here in
Methodist Church in the corner of Cuxton and H Street.
Oh, a local church.
Yeah.
Well, they settled then here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where their first home was?
They rented a house. Well, their first home, they rented a house in the oil fields, and then they moved to Eureka. My older sister was born in Eureka. They were gone about a year. And then they came back here in about 1910, I believe. They rented a house until, for just a few months, until they could build a house. And my father bought land from the land company at what is now the corner of 27th and L Street. That land is, I think, about somewhere between 15 and 20 feet higher than 19th and Chester. My father said only a fool builds on low ground. So L Street didn't go through then. 27th Street was a path. And they built a house there. Then they built several rentals around there. And I was born in that house in 1912. And I lived in that house with my mother until 1963 when I married Charlie.
For heaven's sake, all your life.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, your father worked here then as a blacksmith here.
Mm-hmm.
All your life.
Yeah. When he came in 1910, when they came back from Eureka,
mm-hmm.
He opened a shop in the 1800 block of I Street on the west side of the street, south of the alley.
Doesn't look anything like it now.
Doesn't look anything like it. I can remember it though when I was a child, because blacksmiths get very dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Mom did his banking for him, and she would take me down there, and I could stand right square in the middle of the blacksmith shop, and I wasn't supposed to touch anything while she got the money for the deposit and that sort of thing from Mama, and we went to the bank. But there's an order about a blacksmith shop that you can't miss. And I know I went to U-Haul's blacksmith shop not long ago, and the nostalgic order of a blacksmith shop.
Your mother never worked. She was just housewife. And how many children were there in your family?
Four.
Four of you.
Mm-hmm.
You and one sister?
No. My oldest sister, her name is Nina Beatrice Holman. She's married to Jack Dalek. D-A-I-L-L-A-K. And they still live in town here. Okay. Do you want all that sort of thing? Okay, they have three children. Michael John Dallas. He's the CPA in town. William Holman Dallas. He's the assistant treasurer of Santa Barbara County now, the CPA. And Richard Holman Dallas. And he's working on his doctorate at UCLA right now. And I'm the second child. My name is Mary Julia Holman. Names for both my grandmothers. And I'm glad I got their first names instead of their second names, otherwise I would have been Arizona Adeline Holman. Well, one of my grandmothers was named Mary Arizona because her father led wagon trains across the country, and he thought Arizona was so beautiful, the territory there.
Well, they used to do that,
I think. And then comes my brother. He's William Harvey Holman also. He lives in Santa Maria now. And he had three children. He has two living. A girl, Hillary, and another girl, Dana, are living. And then there's my younger sister. Her name is Jean Holman Groves. She's married to Harry Groves. She lives in San Luis Obispo. She had three children. Catherine, Andrew Jameson, and Martha.
Well, now, when did you become interested in law enforcement, Mary?
Well, when I was teaching school, I loved murder mysteries. And I was teaching in Pleasanton, came home the early summer of 1941, and had this notice of a civil service examination for a policewoman in the paper. And my younger sister was then going to Santa Barbara State, and my brother's wife was living with the family too because he'd been drafted. So at dinner we were saying, just kidding around, and I said, why don't you take the examination for policewoman, Mary? Because I love to solve things by deductive reasoning. I got an A in logic in college. And I think I will. So I put on Sister Jean's shortest dirndl skirt and my high heels and sallied forth to the police department just for fun. I'd always signed my teaching credential for the next year, at my teaching contract for the next year. And so I went down there and told them I thought I'd be their next cop. And they said, okay, fill this out. Anyway, they gave the examination, and there were a lot of women took it. And you were supposed to be a college... Their qualifications for women were much higher than they were for men at that time. You had to be a college graduate, and you had to have some experience working with children. And I don't remember how many women there were taken, but there were a whole pack of them, because a bunch of SRA and those other alphabetized government agencies had folded up shortly before then, and people were out of work. And I had a lovely time up on the third floor of the old city hall. All the commissioners showed up because they'd never hired a woman before. And it was fun because first time I ever took an examination where I could smoke. In those days, I smoked a lot. They had ashtrays all over the place. They had spittoons there too, but the ladies didn't use those. And they apologized for giving us an examination that was aimed at men. And we accepted their apology. And I got 100 on the police aptitude test, which of course flattered me a great deal. And I think I misspelled the word sheriff though in the spelling test. And then we had an oral examination, and I bought a light blue dress because I read somewhere that all men like light blue. And I wore it. We sat around the squad room and waited for everybody to go in. And I felt bad because they didn't call me first, and then I wanted to be called last. And they finally did call me last and didn't ask me any questions. To speak, I was just in there and out of there. And the next day, the chief called and said, go over to Hayden Inman and get a physical examination. Then they called me over there and told me to come get my badge. And I still had my contract signed for the next year. And I said, well, I'll try it for a month. And if I don't like you or you don't like me, at the end of the month, I'll go back to teaching and you hire somebody else. And so then I stayed there.
And who was the chief at that time?
Robert B. Powers, a very remarkable man.
And the date you went to work for him?
July the 3rd, 1941.
Mm-hmm. Just before the war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't give the women the same sort of duty as they did the men. What were your duties more?
They didn't know what to do with me. The League of Women Voters had decided that Bakersfield needed a policewoman. Yeah, I wish I had known exactly what I was going to ask, because I can't remember the woman's name. But the League of Women Voters had, imported a speaker, a policewoman from the city of Santa Barbara, and she'd enthused them so, she was such a charming woman, that they decided this is what Bakersfield needs. And you know, when the ladies start warming the benches in the city council, they didn't get anything they want. So they warmed the benches down there. The police department got along fine without any women. They didn't need any. But they had one. They had a geometry teacher. And they didn't know what to do with her. So and the chief was a little kind of a shortish, heavyset, bald-headed man. I can remember him rubbing the top of his head and saying, I don't know what police women are supposed to do. He said, so we'll make a cop out of you first, and then we'll figure out what women do. So he gave me all the books the police department had, and they fit very easily on the top of one desk at that time. He gave me free rein of all the files, and told me to go on everything, see everything, listen to everything, keep out of the way, keep my mouth shut, and not to get hurt. Which is probably one of the most fascinating assignments anybody could ever have.
No responsibility but observing everything.
Well, yeah, this was my indoctrination. And, well, at that time, when Charlie went to work, Charlie's my husband. Mm-hmm. I guess we ought to tell them that, huh? And Charlie was a sergeant in the police department at this time. When he went to work, I think he rode with somebody two nights, and then they turned him loose and said, you're it. somebody told him that if he knew the Ten Commandments, he had a pretty good idea of what was right and wrong, and if it's against the Ten Commandments, there was a law against it somewhere, and go ahead and pinch them if they violated it, or something to that effect. So I had a better education as far as police was concerned than the men did, because I went with traffic officers when they investigated traffic things, and I could have done a traffic investigation if I had to. And I had a desk in the detective division, and they taught me how to pick locks. And I have a journal at home that would really, if I had thought about it, I would have brought it, because the beginning of my education is, my sister gave it to me, this book, for that first Christmas, and said that I should write the recollections of a female flatfoot. And so I did, for a very short period of time, just for a few months. And a couple of years ago, I came across that thing, and it is kind of funny. Because they used me as a stool pigeon, is what you'd call it. I remember Charlie was working vice, and there's a law against punch boards at that time. I mean, never could catch, what's the man's name that had the cigar store over on Baker Street? Have you been around here a long time? Yeah, okay. Who had the cigar store? Ted Mills. Ted Mills had punch boards, and they couldn't catch Ted Mills with the punch boards. So Charlie stood on one side of the street and sent the new policewoman over to Ted Mills. And I used the city of Bakersfield's money, and I played the punch board, just had a lovely time, didn't win anything. And when I'd used up all the city's money, I looked at old Ted and said, "Well, I guess I'll go now. I guess I'll take the board with me." He says, "You can't do that." I says, "Oh, yes, I can," and showed him my new badge. And Charlie was standing across the street laughing all the time, because he had sent other new policemen in, and Ted could always smell a new cop, but he didn't catch me.
Well, then you were one of the first undercover women that we had here, I guess, weren't you?
Well, I don't know if that's the best undercover woman is.
Well, I think that's what they call them now.
Is it?
Had they hired any woman policeman or policewoman before you?
No, I was Bakersfield's first policewoman. Now, there was an article in the paper not long ago about Helen Rush, and in the article, whoever the girl was who interviewed her was misinformed. Helen occasionally worked as a matron and this sort of thing, but she was not a police officer as such, not paid as such. She was a secretary who sometimes did matron duties.
Well, I remember you having been first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the first one.
Well, then you did that type of duty, I guess, for some time, didn't you?
I did.
Into the juvenile section, didn't you head up the juvenile section?
Mm-hmm. There wasn't any juvenile section when I went there. I really worked kids. And nobody liked to work with kids. So, I worked in the detective division. First, they called it the inspectors at that time. I worked in the inspectors division. And gradually, as cases involving children had come in, because they were not considered important by a lot of the men, and they were time-consuming, and you had to sometimes battle the parents, which is an unpleasant duty. I found more and more of the assignments concerning children would come to me. Because the excuse was, "Well, you used to teach school, and you know all about kids, and therefore, you can do this." And so,
just
we looked around one day, and my life was completely, all my time was taken up with children, and I don't think it got to be called a juvenile division. Or they called it a detail for a while. And it was called a juvenile detail. We had the vice detail and we had the juvenile detail. And they were part of headquarters division of the police department. And the chief explained that to me, that headquarters division reported directly to him because those were the two most politically explosive details in the police department. People really get excited about vice or their kids. So I got the kid. And so eventually the detail worked in, and it got to be too much for one person to do. Well, they gave Mary a helper, and then I got another helper, and then it became a division. It never was a very big division, though. Because I've always thought that children are people and they're not something that are just in the world all apart on their own.
The children in those days, say 1941 to 1950, they were just about the same type of problems with their
they do the same thing they're doing now.
Children are children.
Children are children. People are people. And there were ornery ones and there were good ones and there were in-between ones. We didn't have the problems with narcotics then, but we had lots of problems with booze, and it can be vicious. And we had the zoot suiters in those days, with stomper shoes and long chains hanging down and all that sort of stuff.
Well, we had some type of a problem for children. And then you stayed with them for, were you working with the juvenile section as long as you were with the police department?
Yeah, but as I say, it grew up around me. And I don't even remember what year it was, but I remember Chief Grayson went. Chief Powers had come and gone. We had Chief Grayson. And he got mad at probation office. And then he was supposed to go to a police chief meeting in Florida, I believe, or somewhere on the East Coast. I think it was Florida. He saw me in the office and said, "You can't have any just probation office until I get back and get this argument settled," which was a little difficult. And I was trying to keep the police department legal and still at the same time do my job and have nothing to do with probation office at the same time. And this means absolutely nothing to you because the probation office is the arm of the court. And I was just having a horrible time trying to get things taken care of within the time limits that the law then allowed us on cases. And I remember on Halloween night, I had a child. And I was trying to find somebody I could give that child to before it became illegally in my custody. And it had just a matter of hours. And all the cars were out except one lieutenant's car who remained nameless. And he was saving it to go to coffee in. And I wanted to go out on Edison Highway to see if I could find this kid book. And he wouldn't give me his car. And when the chief came back, I said, "Sir, I decided I want to be a lieutenant." He said, "What makes you want to be a lieutenant?" I said, "If you have to be a lieutenant to get a hot car on Halloween night, I want to be a lieutenant." He said, "Okay." So anyway, they gave an examination for lieutenant not long after that. And before that, all examinations for promotion had been for men only. I was not permitted to take them. And I think I could probably have skinned any of the men there, other than maybe Charlie on any examination. But they wouldn't permit me to take them. But anyway, I was permitted to take this one, so I became a lieutenant. And then it was my brag that I was the highest ranking policewoman in California who was not in jail. Because they did have lieutenants and a couple of captains in the big cities who were running jails. But for one who was actually working on the street, working with officers, working with people. And it was quite a feather in the cap for Bakersfield, because Los Angeles wouldn't permit any of their women to have a rank higher than the sergeant. San Francisco wouldn't, Oakland wouldn't.
What year was that?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No. That's the reason I say if I don't know if it's coming. But I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was around 1950, mm-hmm. sometime around there.
Were there,
we're getting close to the end of time. Mm-hmm. But that was the only examination that, promotional examination I was permitted to take, because the ones that came afterwards were anything else. They still were for men only. Fact is, I'm a pretty good woman's liver now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably one of the original women's livers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, somebody had to pioneer things for mm-hmm. all regions, I guess, and I guess that's what we could consider you a pioneer in our women's bases.
That's something that's concerned.
Not just for our area, but probably like this mm-hmm. for a lot of California. So did you have anything that you remember, any particular case or anything that stands out in your mind quite strongly that happened while you were working, you know, juvenile unit? Any infamous or or famous things that took place?
Not particularly. I can, but this is, so I'd hesitate to talk about them because many of them, people are still living. And it's something that I would want to give some thought to before. I've got a real good forgetter.
Did you work with the schools in any sort of programs or anything, you know, with the children? Did you have any sort of work?
Bakersfield High School used to say that if they were going to move school, they were going to build an office for me right there, too, because I spent so much time there. And I spent a lot of time working with various tenants. Get way to the train. I think one of the funniest things that I worked in the school on time ago was, remember the days of Patty Race?
Oh, yeah.
Bakersfield High School used to have a girls' dormitory, and they had a panty raid, and this would have been in 1952, because that was the year we had the earthquake, and I remember we were in temporary quarters at the corner of 17th and L Street. Those were interesting temporary quarters, too. You had to recognize the furniture in order to tell where you were in the police station. My desk, the juvenile division, was halfway between the men's room and the drinking fountain, and therefore I knew everything that went on in the police department all the time.
What a spot.
It was a lovely spot. And Chief Grayson was a rather unusual man who was not murdered for a sense of humor, among other things. And he found nothing humorous about panty raids at all. They outraged him. And So I am sure the people who are living on this don't care whether I tell about it or not. And the high school had had a Halloween patrol or something other going on, but they'd had a panty raid even so. And I was instructed to find out who did this. And I eventually, after long, long time, found out that a young man who was really a police buff, who belonged to the Stockton family, well known in this county, was supposed to be one of the guards, had something to do with it. And one of my, what I thought was an informant, Dr. Lowenberg, Bickersfield's then only psychiatrist, his son had something to do with it. One of the girls who was complaining most had, I don't remember her name, she'd drawn a map showing the boys how to get in there. And the then city attorney's son was also in it. And I had the city attorney's son sitting alongside my desk trying to talk to him about it, and the chief came over. And he tried to talk to this young man about what a serious situation this was and all this sort of stuff. And the young man, his father's name is Carlston, I can't remember what the boy's first name was. Anyway, he had a book of Plato there. He started reading Plato to Chief Grayson, which was a mistake for his life. And I can remember, Chief Grayson was part Indian. He just danced a little war dance all around my desk, screaming. And he said, put that kid in jail, get him out of here, get him out of my sight. And of course, you know, the police department is a semi-military organization. In the military organization, you always obey the last orders. So my last order was, get him out of his sight. I didn't want to put the kid in jail. Not going to go through the map. So the city attorney then was occupying one corner of this building in which you had to recognize the furniture in order to tell where you were. And there was a little, sort of a partition that wasn't ceiling high. That's been about 6, maybe 7 feet high, that cooped off one corner of this building so the city attorney had privacy. This was immediately post-earthquake. So I took this kid in and sat him behind the door in his father's office so the chief couldn't possibly see him. And so there he sat in back of this door eating a banana while I went around and concluded my investigation and finally got him. But I obeyed the last order. I kept him out of the chief's sight.
How long were you in those temporary quarters because of the earthquake?
Until, about a couple of years, maybe, until the St. Francis School was
taken over.
Yeah, it was very interesting there because we went into these temporary quarters when they decided that the old city hall was unsafe. It was extremely well built, they found, and they started to pull it down. But they decided it was unsafe, so we went into these temporary quarters. And then we had the second earthquake. And then I had the duty, along with some other officers. They picked a few of us, but between us, we knew practically all the merchants in town. And the police department was very proud of the fact that we had no looting, because the whole downtown area was cordoned off, and you couldn't get in there unless you owned a business, managed a business, or was escorted by an owner or a manager, or you had a pass signed by one of these people. And I was one of the people on 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, signing passes. And I can remember a kid burglar whom I know came in, and he said he had a load of meat, and he had to get in to see his boss. And I said, no, you can't go in, Hall, this meat will spoil. I said, oh, I'm sorry, the meat's going to have to spoil, but you can't get in, and you and I both know why. But it was interesting duty then.
Well, and they utilized you for a little of everything, didn't
they? Oh, yes, I did everything.
Mm-hmm. Even though you started out kind of, was a token, so to speak.
Yeah, I was a token.
Right.
But I went to work. Mm-hmm. After I learned, it's such a fascinating business.
Mm-hmm.
Lots more fun than teaching geometry. After all, you can square the hypotenuse and square the other two sides just so many times with interest.
Well, your job would have been something different each day.
Mm-hmm. That was the interesting part about it. There was lots of overtime for which you were not reimbursed in any way. And it makes it a little difficult to understand now when you have police unions and this sort of thing. But it's a different world.
Well, now the way the laws were then for people, children or adults,
they were very different.
They were, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They,
yes, because we had vagrancy laws then, roaming about from place to place at late and unusual hours without any apparent law for business. And, most criminals are rather dull people, but occasionally we get interesting ones. And it was easier then to protect people with the vagrancy law. And I used to ride in the prowl cars at night just for fun, just to see what would happen. And I can remember once riding in a prowl car in the area in which Charlie and I lived now. And we saw this rather seedy-looking young individual with a brand new great big suitcase. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, hiking down the road. So you stop him, ask him who he is, and you want to see what's in the suitcase. In those days, officers had a right to see what was in the suitcase. And we opened the suitcase, and here was all of this stuff. It was obviously out of a burglary. And we didn't have the foggiest notion of what place had been burglarized, and people didn't even know they'd been burglarized yet. So we did what we called bagging the young man. We took him to jail and waited till the next morning until people found out that they'd been burglarized and we knew where it came from. But he was kind of an interesting burglar, because in going through all his stuff, I was always interested in going through their stuff, because I'm curious. I came across this couplet written on something other. In this world of strife and grief, it is not strange to be a thief. And I've always thought that would make an awfully good title for a book. It is not strange to be a thief.
Yeah, the laws. Those days, I mean, now.
In these days, all you can do is tip your hat to him. You see him, even though you know he doesn't belong there. He doesn't look right. You can't look in the suitcase and hang on to his coattail until someone finds out they've been burglarized.
Things change.
Yep, things change.
Well, you have been married now, how long to Charlie?
14 years.
14 years.
Mm-hmm.
You were married before you left your...
Before I left the police department, yes. Yeah. I tell everybody he's an extremely brave man, because any man who will marry a 50-year-old old-maid female flatfoot is brave.
Really brave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you never had any children of your own, just everybody else's.
Everyone else's. Mm-hmm. He's a child now, though.
Okay.
Now, there are not very many people who get to be a mother 6 weeks before you become eligible for Medicare.
How did this happen?
I adopted Charlie's daughter.
Oh.
Yeah. So we had an adult step-parent adoption, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I mean, very fond of her. So now she is my child, and so instead of saying, this is Charlie's daughter, I kind of stutter and say, this is my daughter.
I guess Charlie left the police department to become our sheriff.
Yes.
Was that before you were married or?
After.
After.
No, I retired. I retired in 1965. We were talking then about running him for sheriff. And then he went on leave of absence in early 1966. We ran him for sheriff, and he got it, and he retired.
Mm-hmm. And you live here in Bakersfield, and you both retired now. Do you plan on staying here?
Oh, yes, this is our home.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived here all my life.
Weather and everything else, you still live here.
The weather's so much better now than it was when I was a kid and we didn't have air conditioning.
People find it hard to believe it. It gets much hotter here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a miracle when we got swamp coolers.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have refrigeration, we know it's a miracle.
Yeah. Do you have anything else, Mary, that you'd like to tell us about your days as a police woman, or your early time here, or?
Well, I don't know. Well, to talk about integrated schools now, I think Hawthorne was a truly integrated school when I went there. I believe I was Miss America when I was in sixth grade, and I think that was probably because I was the only Anglo kid there. I was so pretty.
Yeah, things have changed in a few years.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Orientals and
Blacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a long time.
Mm-hmm. I think the children really then did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate you coming today and talking with us very much.
Well, it's a great pleasure. I wish I had given it more thought before I came in. Probably spin it some more.
Well, perhaps we can get you to come
in. I wrote a book.
Oh,
I probably should tell you about that, shouldn't I?
Surely.
Yeah. Okay. Didn't make any money on it at all. But it's great sport to write a book.
What?
And have somebody actually print it.
Mm-hmm. What is the book about?
It's a textbook. Talked a little bit about the type of education I was given when I went there. Well, gradually we started having schools and the police department, this sort of stuff, and now they have a regular academy. But it was probably about 1959, somewhere in there, I was getting ready to teach a class on the handling of juveniles to rookies, and I had a bunch of notes. There was nothing, I don't know if there was more or not, nothing at that time that was written on the interrogation of children. We had a little bit written on interrogation of adults, but nothing as far as children are concerned. So I had written a bunch of stuff, and I took it in to Chief and asked him if he'd read it over, that was Chief Grayson, and see if he thought it was worth duplicating to give to the men. And he surprised me by sending it to Charles Thomas, publisher, and then they surprised, I thought that was real nice, and then they surprised me by writing to me and saying if I would expand it some, they would be real glad to publish the book. And so I did. And I kept trying to write things and not doing very well. And finally, time was getting short. I was supposed to get the manuscript finished. And I went into the automobile club, and for the whole there, within an hour's, within a day's driving distance, where there's nothing to look at, and I got a cheap motel with thick walls that you can pack, because I'd taught myself how to pack by then, and I didn't know how. And reasonably good, inexpensive restaurant. The guy says, "You considered Bullhead City?" And I never even heard of Bullhead City. Where is it? So I went to Bullhead City for a week, all by myself, and worked on my book, and finally got it finished, and it was published by Charles Thomas, publisher. Not enough people bought it for me to make any money. I don't know if they recovered their publishing costs or not, but it's great sport to see your name on a book. Well, it had a limited appeal, I think. After all, a book on handling children was aimed at rookie cops.
Did the local department use it then for potential?
It was used a little bit. Of course, all the laws have changed now, so it no longer has any meaning at all.
Mm-hmm.
But
the time is very up to date.
It was very flattering that they were willing to publish what I thought my thoughts were on something.
Developing the juvenile section, so to speak, and so forth with the department. Did you ever get called upon to speak about your experiences in maybe other cities or anything like this? Did you have any connection with them and their juvenile?
No. Mm-hmm.
Too bad.
Well, I did a lot of talking, but it was just, you know, representing the police department of clubs and this sort of stuff.
You belong to some of the local civic organizations and so forth
around here? Well, I used to belong to a number of them, and I quit them all except Zonta Club, and I still belong to Zonta.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing your name picture in the paper many times.
Well, I used to do a lot of the talking for the police department. And I thought when you're a free program, you become very, very popular. and cops are free programs. And people are always looking for a free program. It was an interesting life. I enjoyed it.
Would you recommend the police work for women?
I don't know if I would or not, the way it is now.
Quite different.
Yeah. Because, well, maybe they have fun. I had fun. I thought it was fun to be a cop. I enjoyed it.
Well, I agree.
And I don't know if it's fun to be a cop anymore. It me like it would be. It would be so frustrating now. It always has been frustrating, but I think it's more so now. We're about out of time?
Do you have any particular type of hobbies or anything that you are interested in nowadays that you have a little more time? Well, Charlie and I seem to have very little time now. He stays on committees and I try to catch up with him, and that's about it. We live a quiet life and a peaceful life, and it's nice.
You
enjoy your...
Both of our mothers living, and we have to take care of them, and that's a little time consuming. So.
Still have close family time. You have any special outlook as far as cooking or anything like that is concerned? I asked if I was, I can't remember where I was one day when you were looking for a slab of marble.
Oh, really?
For candy making.
Oh, golly. Well, you know, I'm probably one of the few people in town that has your own tombstone in the kitchen.
I knew you said you had.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I hollered for that slab of marble so long that Charlie went up to Green Lawn and bought a blank for me. So now I have that, and it's real good for candy making. And if you want to know how to make peanut brittle, I make it just a little cheese candy mix at any time. Yeah, on a marble slab.
Well, do you have any hobbies like that? I mean, do you try to do cooking as a hobby or anything?
Oh, I cook a lot. I make miscellaneous wedding presents. I make aspens because sheriffs get invited to everybody's wedding, whether you know them or not. And so I have a kind of an idiot's delight pattern of an afghan that doesn't take too long to make. And I have them made up ahead of time. Then when somebody's grandchild gets married, well, I just wrap up another afghan and off we go. But it's something to do when you no longer smoke.
You gave up your smoking.
Yeah, I gave up my smoking.
I think a lot of people probably have, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to have this here. Well, I guess, Mary, that just about finishes it for the day. If they contact you again, I'm sure that maybe you can get some of your little ladies together and maybe...
Yeah, I would try to think of someone because I wouldn't want to embarrass anybody or injure anyone in any way.
All right. Charlie just came and reminded me how the city of Bakersfield improved its automotive equipment. Chief Grayson thought that a comfortable top was a poor top. And so the no police cars had heaters in them. And people traveled with bricks wrapped in newspapers, lanterns, everything else at night, trying to keep warm, blankets, everything else. And my car didn't have a heater either. So we had some itinerant sign painter who painted jolly Christmas messages on the bulletin board in the police department. And as he was painting jolly Christmas messages, I had an art major as well as a mathematics major, so I told him I wanted to paint a little bit too. So I, on this Christmas scene, I put a note to Santa Claus. Dear Santa Claus, please bring me a heater for my police car. Love, Mary. And it embarrassed Chief Grayson so in front of some of his friends because they said, sure, they have heaters in their cars. Everybody had heaters in their cars by 1957. But he screamed and hollered to get Mary a heater for her car, so they took one out of property, didn't they?
The heater had been confiscated.
They
couldn't find the owner.
It got hung in my car. And that was the first heater that was in a Bakersfield police car. And then eventually, after that, a few other ranking officers got heaters. And then eventually they ordered all the cars with heaters. I am responsible for
the heaters in the car.
A present day policeman. That's nuts.